Relentless Roger and the Caveman Doctor, Episode 7. Today we are talking about a new study reinforcing the flaws in the calories in, calories out model. Does fat clog arteries? And Roger goes into his cheat meal expose. Relentless Roger and the Caveman Doctor, Episode 7. I am Relentless Roger, here with Dr. Colin Champ. Colin, what is going on?
Just pumped for episode 7. It's great to be here with you, Roger. It's just great to spend time with you.
It's a pleasure, man. You know, in our busy lives, I think having this hour to do a podcast is great. Because otherwise, we'd probably see each other like once every 3 months.
Yeah, this is definitely...
And the crazy thing is we live like a 5-minute walk from each other. But I still think it would be like once every 3 months.
Yeah. Well, except for the grocery store encounters at Whole Foods.
That's true. That's true.
Which I've been weirdly increasing in frequency lately. Anyway, I'm sorry. So things are good for me. Not a lot going on. Just same thing, studying a lot for my boards. And big news for me was yesterday I got interviewed on Get Better Wellness radio talk show.
Nice.
Radio podcast talk show on the ketogenic diet for cancer. And it went well. The host, Erin Chamberlake, was great. She just... asked a lot of great questions. It was great to talk with. So I was very, very nervous going in, and it went well. So that's my big news. What's going on with you?
For me, first of all, that's great. Congrats on the interview.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. Sorry, we have an action-packed show today, so I'm speeding through here, but I appreciate it.
We're going to finish in like 20 minutes. No, things are great on my end. The Relentless Transformation is wrapping up, so we're in the final week. It's an 8-week program with a prep week, so really 9 weeks. And to come to the finish line of 9 weeks is pretty monumental. And for the people who have been part of this community especially, they've been getting killer results. And
that's great.
It's been moving. It really has been moving. We had a couple moments this week where it's been either looking at the measurements or the calipers or the scale or the pictures and just myself and the transformer being shocked, you know. You really can do a lot of amazing things in 9 weeks. And I would just say, again, for those, I try to give takeaways where I can when it comes to positive change. And for those looking to set out on your own positive change trajectory, standing here at the end of 9 weeks, it's kind of like if you knew what awaited you in the 9th week, you'd do it. You'd do whatever it took to get there. So just have some faith that it will get there in the end and start walking that path, and you're going to be thrilled that you did it.
Great. Good stuff.
So, enough of that. I understand that you have something you want to talk about that ties in nicely with something we chatted about a couple weeks ago.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So big day for me yesterday. Journal of American Medical Association, JAMA, published a pretty big influential article, especially in our area of the world here. So if you remember, a couple weeks ago, Roger brought up the whole is a calorie and how the initial calorie measurements were made for machines, not for human beings. They didn't incorporate hormones. They didn't incorporate our innate ability to store some things versus burning others.
Yep.
So Dr. Ebling, I spelled her name wrong here. Dr. Ebling and her group looked at this kind of under the microscope, under some of the most stringent conditions that we have. Now, for you guys out there that are unfamiliar with dietary nutrition studies, they're all over the place. They're very tough. They're tough to do. They're expensive. It's tough to know what actually people are eating. So what they did was they took 21 participants. They put them on a 7-month run-in diet where they underwent extreme weight loss. I think the average was about 30 pounds. Yeah, 30 pounds leading into this. And now what they did at this point, they took the three different groups. They put them on an isocaloric diet, so they were all eating the same calories. And they put one group on a Mediterranean-like diet. They put another group on a typical low-fat, conventional wisdom type of diet, the one that your doctor's likely telling you to go on.
The SAD diet.
The SAD diet, the standard American diet. And the third, they put on a very low-carb diet, which you know we talk about often on this show. And if you remember, several weeks ago we talked about a low-carb diet having tentatively a metabolic advantage. We're not sure why, but if you eat the same amount of calories for whatever reason on a low carb diet, you still tend to lose weight.
Yep.
And as always, this leads to the most angry responses. I mean, we said there's religion, there's politics, and there's a calorie is a calorie.
Yeah. Yep.
I've gotten emails, argued with on Facebook, just people criticizing me, calling me names, saying I don't know anything about engineering, thermodynamics, etc. Anyway.
And it's so ingrained, too, that even if I was talking to a client about this or somebody at the studio, even if someone's nodding at me, sometimes I can tell that they're just going to fall right back on conventional wisdom.
Mm.
You know,
oh, absolutely.
So it's so calories in, calories out is so ingrained. Calories on menus, calories at Starbucks, you know, calories everywhere. It's so ingrained. And, so anyway, go on.
So the big thing on this study, they looked at all kind of markers, the typicals. The big thing was they looked at resting energy expenditure, and this is the amount of calories required by the body during basically a day of non-activity. So just kind of doing your thing, how many calories does your body burn? And they looked at this because the more weight you lose, the more that value goes down. So when you lose weight, your body burns less calories in the following days, weeks, months, whatever you want to call it.
Stands to reason, right? If you're 200 pounds, you're going to need more calories than you would if you're 150 pounds.
Absolutely. And this is one of the reasons why it's so hard to continue a diet. People lose weight and then your body burns less calories. So you kind of have to get a little stricter per se as it continues. And this is why it gets more difficult. So they looked at this and they looked at total energy expenditure, and they wanted to see, how much does your body slow down? How much does the gas pedal of metabolism slow down when you start to lose weight? And they compared all three of these diets. And what they found was the decrease in resting energy occurred in all of them, which we expect. People were losing weight, and we expect this to happen. However, the decrease in calories per day were 205 for the low-fat diet. So the people in the low-fat diet, their body were burning about 200 calories less per day.
Okay.
166 for the low GI diet, so for the Mediterranean type diet, whatever you want to call it.
Yep.
And then 138 calories, so that's 70 less for the low carb diet.
Wow.
So that in itself was interesting. Then they also looked at total energy expenditure, and this was where there was huge results. The low fat diet, they dropped 423 calories per day. And that right there is why telling someone to cut their calories and to exercise more is not a diet, but rather torture.
Yep.
I mean, that, some interesting results there. Dropped 297, so about 300 calories per day for the low GI diet. Only 97 calories per day for the low carb diet.
Wow.
So when you lose weight through calorie restriction, through the conventional diet, etc., your burning capability drops four times more than when you do a low carb diet. And that right there is what we would call a metabolic advantage. And now I'm sure I'm going to get more hate emails from this and more comments. But
so just to pull it back to these results. So what you're saying is that the high-fat, low-carb diet, as the body's dropping weight, it's losing its metabolism slower. In other words, it's retaining its metabolic advantage.
Exactly. It's continuing to push the gas pedal on burning fat.
And what was the other side to it? The other side was they were still moving more? Is that the second piece you were talking about?
The second piece was just total energy expenditure. So yeah, so it incorporates more aspects than the resting energy is just kind of, like I said, it's if you're doing nothing.
So all in, movement, metabolic advantage, all in. I mean, obviously the high fat, low carb is exhibiting a pretty significant advantage here.
Absolutely. And this is no surprise to all of us out there who have switched over to a low carb diet, kept our calories the same, and watched the fat melt off. This is why it happens. And this is why it's so much easier to eat this diet. And this is why you're rewarded for doing it.
Yep.
And this is also why when you just cut calories and try to exercise more, it's so damn hard to do it. And it's why it's torture. So it's, you know, it's great to have some data to back it up. And I've had a smile on my face now.
I like it. You know, because it's been interesting. I think you mentioned this as you were introducing this article. We still don't know exactly why, right? I mean, when it comes to, all right, if we're saying calories in, calories out is broken, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we're saying that certain macronutrient breakdowns, and we obviously talk a lot about high fat, low carb, that there are advantages there. We might know the areas to look at, right? We might look at, you know, hormonal areas and other sorts of things, but we still don't know exactly why. But when a study like this comes out, it really starts to back it up.
Absolutely. And it it gives us a little more ammo, too, when people roll their eyes at us. There's actually data here published in a high-impact journal. I mean, JAMA is a big journal.
Yep.
And this study had its issues like any nutritional study.
Yep.
But this is one of the best we got, and it's very interesting stuff, and it's really not surprising to a lot of us. Not surprising at all.
No, because, yeah, you and I have talked a lot about empirically, just from what we've experienced, and from my end, what I've experienced with countless people who walk into the studio, that they'll be marching along at a particular caloric level, and we won't be getting the results we want. And they'll switch over and start dropping some of the carbohydrates, especially some of the processed carbohydrates out, swapping in more fat. And it's like a switch has been flipped.
Absolutely.
I see it time and time again. But again, it's tough because some of the people who come out with arguments, they are quoting data. They want hard data. Mm-hmm. And we haven't necessarily had it yet. And I guess this study is the first definitely early in the ball game, but hopefully there are more like it.
And we all know that exercise is important as well. It's an important facet of health. And this shows that following a low-carb diet is going to give you more energy to exercise too.
Yeah.
So if you want to do both.
And I think that's pretty amazing too, because I think what a lot of people associate with low-carb is Atkins, you know? And I don't think that when we talk about low-carb, we're not really referring to Atkins per se. We are talking about, you know, a little bit of fruit here and there, not necessarily restrictions on the types of vegetables you're eating. So maybe a modified.
Yeah, I don't even understand fully what Atkins is anymore. It's changed over the years. I think some of our viewers would be considered strict followers of Atkins. You know, we're not promoting a ketotic diet all the time. We're not. I mean, like I said previously, I go with the sliding scale.
Yep.
If you're gaining weight, cut your carbs down.
Right.
See what happens. So yeah, I'd agree with you there.
One of the great things is, though, I think when people conjure up images of Atkins, it's down in the dumps energy. I know that, you know, back in the day, I would interact with people, even before I got into this profession, I would interact with people who were on Atkins and they'd be losing weight at a rapid rate, but they would feel terrible. Mm-hmm. They would feel awful. Their energy would be through the floor. And what we're, you know, the approach that we're discussing and then what this, JAMA study is supporting is the fact that, hey, your energy might be better.
It may be better.
Which is huge.
If you are feeling down on energy, it's probably more a salt issue and a not enough fat issue, frankly.
Yep. Yep.
Which modern medicine would not think too highly of those recommendations. Nonetheless.
So let's actually write exactly what you just said about fat. Leads us into the listener question of the week.
Oh, I didn't even, not planned.
Not planned, but we're here.
We have hit our stride.
We're getting good, man.
Go for it.
All right. So I got two questions here to read, and both of them are addressing a very similar topic. So I'm going to read them both. Number one, I have a coworker whose doctor just told her she needs to lower her quote unquote bad cholesterol. He said she needs to reduce eating animal and high saturated fats. Does the animal fat part seem right to you? Do you have any recommendations? And that's from Jim. Jim, thank you for sending that question over. The second one, just to keep going with this. I'm totally on board with paleo, and I see its benefits. However, when it comes to ingesting more healthy fat to help replace processed carbohydrates, how do you reconcile its artery clogging effects? And that one's from Jill. Thank you, Jill. So, Dr. Champ, what say you?
So, I would say, show me the data. So there's no level one evidence to support those comments that they're making. In fact, the level one evidence goes against that. I understand why they're making those comments. Epidemiologically, a lot of the data does show an increase of coronary artery disease with increased fat. Unfortunately, that's epidemiologic data, which is oftentimes closer to garbage. Garbage in, garbage out is the exact term. And it is hypothesis.
Not to be confused with calories in, calories out.
Yeah, exactly. It's hypothesis generating. But, you know, if you turn to Dr. Jeff Volek, Dr. Mm-hmm. Westman, there's a good study by Cassandra Forsyth, and I'll list these all on there, just rattling some off the top of my head, where we've compared these diets, and all these markers of clogged arteries go down. We know that HDL always goes up. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a study where it doesn't. I'm not familiar with one. And a lot of these, you know, LDL goes down and triglycerides uniformly go down as well. So
I was hoping you would mention that word, triglycerides, because you can't look at cholesterol metrics in a box, right?
Absolutely.
It's not a black box. You have to really expand your field of vision and start to incorporate triglycerides and some other metrics because, I mean, do you have any comments on accuracy of cholesterol measurements?
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head, and I was getting there eventually, and I'm glad you got me there quicker. But yeah, cholesterol is several things. It's LDL or VLDL, very low density lipoprotein. That's what I'm sure your doctor's referring to as the bad cholesterol. There's high density lipoprotein, HDL. Those are the sponges that go around and sop up the LDL. And then there are these other things, triglycerides, that you brought up that I love because doctors forget about those. And triglycerides are basically your liver on too much carbohydrates, turning them into triglycerides. And these are heavily, heavily, heavily associated with coronary artery disease, with clogged arteries that the listeners speak of here. Yet doctors conveniently forget about those or just don't know that much about them.
And how, again, do triglycerides go up?
So triglycerides go up when there is a lot of sugar in your blood that your liver is on overload. It can't do anything with, so it makes triglycerides. The other thing is I posted on this a while ago, which I think you were alluding to, the accuracy of cholesterol tests. I went and got my cholesterol test done one day,
yep.
And I was curious. I went back and got it the next day, and it was 40 points difference.
Yep.
So in a matter of a day, my doctor would have been trying to put me on a statin, which I would never go on ever, and the next day I was below normal. Secondly, a lot of people that I push my, you know, caveman diet to, including myself, including family members who I get labs on.
Yep.
I'm waiting for that first person's cholesterol to get worse. I mean, I know it happens because that, you know, everyone's cholesterol is different. There's other ways to look at it. If your cholesterol is not whatever the authorities say it should be, maybe that's just where your cholesterol is. And frankly, the lowest mortality from cholesterol is between 200 and 240, which is considered a high cholesterol.
Yep.
So the whole system is backwards.
And if you have that level of cholesterol with low triglycerides, you're not necessarily in a bad place.
Exactly.
I want to go back to the question from Jim about the coworker whose doctor just told her she needs to lower her quote unquote bad cholesterol. And when you were discussing cholesterol, you know, it traditionally was separated into HDL and LDL, right? And HDL was thought of as good cholesterol. LDL was thought of as bad cholesterol. And then you had gone into VLDL, which is a particular type of LDL that's smaller high-density particles.
Low-density
particles. That's the bad stuff, right? I'm not confident that that's what this doctor is referring to. I think this doctor might be referring to LDL overall.
I wouldn't doubt it.
And in that case, you know, to Jim's coworker, you might want to consider getting a breakdown of your LDL because not every blood test. In fact, I don't even think the majority of blood tests are doing that for you right now.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think my hospital started to. I'm not totally sure. And the other issue here is the chicken or the egg argument. And LDL patches your arteries. So LDL, it's the band-aid. It's the police officer that's called in for the issue. So by blaming LDL, we don't know what actually the issue is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's I think Talbot, one of these guys, said it's like blaming the police who come to the crime. I mean, LDL is patching your artery wall up. So if you're smoking, if you're stressed out, if you have other issues going on, that's what's causing the damage. This LDL is patching it up. So should you stop that? Should you stop the band-aid from coming on?
Yep.
These are questions we don't know the answer to. And, you know, when everyone goes to the statin route, when a statin study shows an actual good result, then maybe I'll change my mind. But until then, they're garbage.
So I think what's worked for us, let's talk about what's worked for us and what's worked for people that we're close to. And tell me if you agree with all these things. I think for us, when addressing these questions, I would think, don't shy away from animal products. Just get them well sourced. And as long as they're well sourced, i.e. grass-fed beef, free-range chicken and turkey, these kinds of things, free-range eggs.
Hormone-free,
right. So wherever you can, especially if it's higher in fat content, just make sure it's well sourced and you're good. I wouldn't say shy away from saturated fat.
No, I would say eat saturated fat. Shy away from vegetable oils and these unsaturated fats because they get oxidized.
Right.
And they carry these oxidized fats, which we know clog your arteries.
So I would say be concerned with your vegetable and processed seed oils. Be concerned with your sugar intake, be concerned with your wheat intake, these kinds of things, because that is, again, going down triglyceride road. And once we expand our vision out of just cholesterol, we're far less likely to see a bad combination.
Absolutely.
I also want to say on Abel James' podcast, which is called Fat Burning Man, he had Dr. William Davis on recently. He's the author of Wheat Belly. And there's a fantastic, I think it's like a 5 to 6 minute piece of that podcast where Dr. William Davis tackles this question and he does it in style. So I do want to shout that out. We're going to put the link in the show notes. And the thing to keep in mind is you want to move. I mean, obviously, hey, Abel James. I'm combining names now. Abel James' podcast, Fat Burning Man, is fantastic. So if you have the time, listen to it all. Just listen to the whole podcast. If not, if you jump to the 42-minute, 42-second mark, you'll hit that question right on the head. And again, I think it's like 5 to 6 minutes, and Dr. William Davis does a fantastic job.
Wonderful. 42-42. Moving along here. I'll be brief, but Roger really burst my bubble last week with coffee, so I've brought some reinforcements.
But I was careful to say that I just glossed over the title.
You were careful. You were definitely careful, but I got some reinforcements.
Bring it.
So the first article is not a reinforcement, actually. It shows that coffee intake may correlate with an increase in high blood pressure.
Okay.
But it's minimal, and it's not a great study. I'll just put it on there. You guys can read it.
And real quick, just to go back to, for those of you who haven't listened to last episode, first of all, shame on you, but second of all, what we did mention, or what I mentioned regarding coffee, was having glossed over and found a title that tied coffee to gluten sensitivity. In other words, saying I believe it was 10%. I don't know. I forget the 10%. 10% of coffee is a protein that could be cross reactive with gluten sensitivities,
yeah,
right?
With the animal, yeah.
That was the gist of it. So again, I was clearly targeting Colin and bursting his coffee bubble, and here he is to defend.
Well, here's a study where I've heard people quote this often, where they looked at patients with Parkinson's disease, and this is a case control study, so it's your typical statistical alchemy. But anyway, they showed that an inverse association between coffee drinking and Parkinson's disease. So the more coffee you drink, the less you get Parkinson's disease. You know, there's confounders and all this other business. But anyway, score 1 point for coffee. The next one is actually a recent article, May 17th, actually. This was in the New England Journal of Medicine, so a pretty big journal. And this is, it's pretty hilarious. But they looked at the association of coffee drinking with total and cause-specific mortality. Total mortality is just your risk of dying. Cause-specific is dying from a specific cause, like breast cancer mortality would be dying from breast cancer. All-cause mortality would be having breast cancer, but just dying from anything. So they looked at 5 million person years between 1995 and 2008 from a total of 33,500 men and about 19,000 women. And they looked at the risk of death from drinking coffee, and they found it was increased. Basically, the risk of death increased with coffee, but then they also found that more coffee drinkers smoked and did other bad things. So then those are called confounders. So then they do statistical manipulation to pull those out, and they actually found an inverse relationship. So the more coffee you drank, the less chance you had of dying.
Are you promoting this as like some sort of elixir here?
This is what you would call hypothesis generating, nothing more than that. But anyway, this changes absolutely nothing, nor did the article last week.
Exactly.
But anyway, it's just an interesting perspective. I promised I would get something out there about it. I actually got a lot of emails from you guys saying, oh no, don't take my coffee away. So
we should call this section last week and this week pointless musings on coffee.
On coffee, yeah.
The conclusion, right? We're not really sure.
The funny thing is I pounded a ton of coffee yesterday morning before my podcast on the ketogenic diet. I was just shaking out of my mind. I was actually going to swear away coffee forever until I saw this, and now I want to live forever, so I'm going to continue to drink
coffee. Well, it's kind of funny. I think we've all been in those situations, or for those coffee drinkers out there where, come on, one time or another, you had a little too much coffee and you found yourself shaking a little bit and you're like, this is not healthy. I'm never going to do this again. And then, of course, the next day comes and
23 hours later.
And 23 hours later, you have completely forgotten your vow and you are right back to drinking coffee.
Well, coffee, I view it as a treat. It's a way that I treat myself. So I know you're going to talk about the cheat meal.
Oh, man.
So can you treat yourself this week?
All right. So here's the deal. I think this is worth talking about because it's a very personal issue to me. And, you know, Colin, you know, and a lot of my clients know, and a lot of my friends and family know, I'm a very health-focused person. And I do like to think of, you know, the body as a temple, and you want to put only things in it, or as close to possible as 100%, things in it that really makes it function at a high level, especially when you're under a lot of stress, mm-hmm. right? But one thing that I've been doing for a long time, and when I say long time, I thought it was four. I've been throwing the number 4 years out there. When I got down to write a few notes for this segment, I actually figured out that I was doing it for about 6 years. That's a long time. So about 6 years ago, I ran into online, and it was brand new at the time, and it was a health blog. It was more of a health blog at the time by a guy named Tim Ferriss. And some of you out there might be shaking your heads, and he wrote the four hour work week, and he also wrote the 4 hour body. So he's a pretty popular author, but at this time he was just getting his start, and he was talking about a lot of, physical hacks, you know, ways to hack the body and get great results. And so he wrote this article called From Geek to Freak, How I Gained, and I think it was like 34 pounds of muscle in a month or something preposterous like that. And, at the time, you know, I wasn't yet in the fitness profession. I was still in finance. I was in the finance world. So this is something I'm reading at my desk during the day. And, I got pretty interested in it and ended up reading and figured out that as part of his protocol, Tim Ferriss took a day a week to just kind of eat whatever, to knock his cravings out all in one fell swoop. And then for the other 6 days of the week, be spot on. And at the time, this was, you know, this light in your mind goes off and you think, oh, you know, are you telling me it's okay to eat whatever I want in the span of a day? My gosh, this is amazing, right? And that's kind of how I took it. I think sometimes you believe what you want to believe.
Absolutely.
And one of the quotes from one of the blog articles was, that's right, eating pure crap can help you lose fat. And I really took it to heart. And one day a week, I would go nuts. It would be completely bonkers. And then the other 6 days, I would lock it down and I'd be the healthiest person on the planet. And I'll tell you what, for a while, it worked really well. It started as a great way for me to focus within a week. And then on that seventh day, I would really enjoy it. But I am an extremist. That is my nature. That is my personality. I'm very good when it's black or white. So it continued and ended as an unmitigated disaster. And it became an excuse for eating quantities of certain types of food that no human being should. And I really enjoyed the feeling of eating well for 6 days and, let's say, going out with friends and or whoever, and them looking at you, you know, cockeyed with their jaw dropped to the floor as you shoveled in crazy quantities of horrible food. And they'd look at you and be like, how are you fit? You know, how are you healthy? I actually took pleasure in that because I knew for the other 6 days I was locked down.
It's interesting. I used to have my cheat. I haven't done cheats in a while, but I used to do them in the privacy of my own home.
Yeah.
Because I was known as a health conscious person.
Yep.
And I didn't want people to see.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So anyway. I would go both ways with it. Sometimes I would do it in the privacy of my own home, and then sometimes I would do it out. But usually the people I was around when I was out, it was actually a good segue to start talking about health. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh no, the other 6 days I'm locked in. You know, this is when I get a chance to treat myself. Right. So again, for me, the extremist, it became this horrible challenge. It was like on that seventh day, I had to, you know, eat even more or find even more cravings to squash. And, you know, here are some conclusions. There's no excuse to go off on the deep end with crap food ever. One of the reasons for a cheat day or a cheat meal is a metabolic benefit, right? A metabolic advantage. It's if you get used to eating sub-level calories for a long enough period of time, and you can shock your body out of it once in a while, there could be some benefit to that. But you can do that. You know, if you buy into that, and there are some studies that, that show some decent support for that, at least to a small level, you can do that with good food.
Yeah, you could do a couple sweet potatoes.
Exactly.
Doesn't have to be chocolate chip cookie dough ice cream.
Exactly. There are repercussions afterwards. There is spillage afterwards to a cheat meal or a cheat day. This is what I found, that if I did that on, let's say, a Friday or a Saturday, and there was still a piece of the weekend left, the body would be going through, you know, blood sugar crash, withdrawal the next day. And there would be times where it would cause spillage into the next day.
That addresses what is your goal with the cheat day?
Yes.
If it's to feel better.
Yep.
That may not happen. If you could have one pancake and that's your cheat day, it's fine.
Yep.
If you're going all day eating the stack at Denny's or something, you're going to feel like crap the next day.
Absolutely. It also reinforces bad habits. So, you know, it will start to rewire your brain a little bit, rewire your reward pathways, release dopamine when you're, you know, chowing down on the 12 Snickers bars, you know, and that can be bad, and that can lead right into addictive behavior. And that's, you know, just talking honestly about myself, like just thinking about some of the brutal cheat days that I've done. You know, I think a couple friends listening to this podcast are probably like, yep, I remember
just
that.
Thinking that. Yeah. And they're like, man, this guy is full of it. I used to watch him just go to town.
Yeah, but this is complete. Like I admit it, you know, it was behavior that started out good for me and then ended up horribly. And it, you know, becomes addictive behavior. On that seventh day, guess what? Your body is clamoring for that binge. It wants that dopamine, you know, it wants the brain to give that dopamine out and get the reward. So, anyway, the bright side, here's some decent takeaways, right? And this is not only, with myself in mind, but also with some clients in mind. Not everyone's an extremist like me. And like Colin just said, if you can eat a pancake or, you know, a moderate stack of pancakes and feel good and not feel that desire to grab that second or third or fourth plate and just stick with that, you know, maybe it's a useful construct. Maybe it's something that does, hey, I can fall back on this. I can enjoy this. I can go out with some friends and blow off a little steam. And maybe it's not the worst thing in the world. So I would say depends on your personality type. But be careful of the phraseology you use. I go back to that quote. That's right. Eating pure crap can help you lose fat. That's a bad lesson because again, you can get the metabolic advantage by removing the phrase pure crap, right? It doesn't have to be pure crap. So that's never something to strive for. If you want the metabolic advantage, you can get it with good food.
You can do sweet potatoes and you will, after time, stop craving the carbs. So you're still getting that. This is a different kind of metabolic advantage, but what they refer to as a metabolic advantage without having the craving, then you're not going six more days of craving ice cream or whatever.
Yep, absolutely.
I've admitted defeat to carbs.
Yep.
If I eat them, they will own me.
Yep.
And I will crave them further and I will feel terrible afterwards. I admit defeat and I've just removed them and except for vegetables and fruit and maybe some dark chocolate.
It's a great way to be. It really is a great way to be. And I'm looking back now. So since I've been promising to talk about this in a segment, it's been 2 months since I've had a true cheat meal. And, it's been great. It's been nothing short of great. You know, the first week or two you miss it and you think, how am I going to live without it? You know, this is something that I've fallen back on for years, for a long time. But then guess what? Weeks 3 and 4 roll around and it's like, wow, why did I ever do that?
Yeah.
You really look back and you kind of smack yourself upside the head because guess what? Your brain is now rewiring another way and the carb cravings are gone. The sugar cravings are gone. And you're looking back and just shaking your head at yourself like, wow, I really let that get to a bad place.
Yeah. I've found too that it's not just about eating carbs to have a treat meal, a cheat meal, whatever. Yeah. Unfortunately, our whole society glorifies carbs. It's your birthday party. You get a cake. You do well at the t-ball game, they take you for ice cream. So those things have taken that place of celebration, of you know, treating yourself. But it doesn't have to be that. And one thing I've done is I eat dairy. I not a lot of dairy, but I eat cheese, especially older cultured cheeses. And that is not a official paleo, but that is one of my non-caveman things.
Yep.
And so what I do now is I get a really nice cheese and I pair it with a really good wine. And that is also very not paleo caveman. But those are my two kind of non, and I really enjoy it. I enjoy setting up for it. I enjoy the experience, and it's it's gotten me to the point where if that's my cheat meal, if that's something I do that's not caveman or paleo, which is cheese and wine, then I'm in a pretty darn good spot.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm talking like a glass of wine, not, I don't down a bottle one.
Yeah. And again, the other thing, I do want to pull it back to some of my clients who I've talked to about this and are very up on my latest experiences. I always try and share things that I think are positive. And a couple of my recent transformers were not freaking out by any stretch, but they're saying, do I have to go without treats for the rest of my life? And no, the answer is no. If you can just keep these things in mind and understand that there are certain foods that have addictive properties and have seriously addictive properties, and just keep that in mind, just go into a treat, or, you know, if you're at an office and you do want a slice of birthday cake, or you're at home with your kids celebrating a little league win and you want a slice of pizza, I think you can have those things and just understand how your body will react. It's just all I would say is understand what the food itself is doing or not doing for you, and then make the decision with that considered.
And if you're eating cleanly most of the time, when you do slip up, it's not as big of a deal.
Yep.
You know, you're eating something once every so often, whereas some people are eating that every day.
It's very true.
So
I am done with cheat meals or treat meals, and I am a much happier camper now, and I'm much less scary to go out to dinner with.
I'm with you. I got rid of them a while ago, and I've never looked back. So, all right, Roger, we are good stuff there. We are rounding third here, and we're going to take it into your exercise takeaway.
Oh, it's takeaway time. Favorite part of the day. Now, of course, I feel very exposed now that I've had my cheat meal expose.
We need to get the MTV film crew in here.
Yeah, why not?
Well, that's MTV.
I'm not going to stage one for the cameras, though, man. I'm done with that. Moving on.
The True Hollywood Story. Roger's cheat meal.
All right. Exercise. My takeaway is this. Coming back from a long weekend away, Marissa and I hit the Wissahickon, and we hit Forbidden Drive. For those of you Philly locals, we hit Forbidden Drive for a nice, solid 6-mile hike. And it was fantastic. And, you know, in the city of Philadelphia, and for those of you out there in big cities, sometimes the green is few and far between. You know, those trees and grass, you don't tend to see too much of it. Every now and again, make sure you get out to a big park where, you know, you can't see big buildings in the distance, and, you know, there is a canopy of trees, and it smells nice, and you got some animals, you know, flying and running around. It will do wonders for you mentally.
100%.
And
I'll link shoes off.
Yeah, exactly. Barefoot. Take shoes off. Yep, there's a nice stream that goes by there, and it's amazing just to get down on the rocks by the stream, and I love it. I absolutely love it. Every time I go and do it, I wonder why it's been so long. So I'll link to an article as well. We'll link to an article in the show notes on the concept of forest bathing, and it's just really showing the benefits. I think the study was based in Japan, but it's just showing the benefits of getting out to a natural green space, especially when there's water involved too. I think water exhibits extra calming effects. So, get out there to your local park. If you're in Philadelphia, check out the Wissahickon. The area is called Valley Green, and the specific part we hiked was called Forbidden Drive. So make sure you get out there to check that out.
Nice. I like it.
Dr. Champ.
Even if you have to force yourself, get out there.
That's right.
My exercise takeaway is more of a dietary than an exercise takeaway. But for those of you out there that are doing generally low carb, whether you're ketotic or not, if you're feeling down, you're feeling pretty beat up and you're hitting the wall with your workouts, check your salt intake. A lot of you guys need to either increase your salt intake or even salt load. If you're in ketosis, you absolutely have to salt load. And a lot of times, back to your kind of cheat meal, how it brings you back to your state, making you exercise better, et cetera. A lot of times it is just people are salt deprived. So you are losing all your fluid through your kidneys. So get your salt up, will make you feel better. And along those lines, sometimes the cheat, you're really just craving salt.
Yep.
And I've found that adding salt has helped to eliminate my desire to treat myself.
I like that. And if you were to suggest a way to get that salt in, is there a specific type of salt that you recommend?
This is Perfect. It goes right into my next takeaway.
Take right into the nutrition takeaways. Here we go.
Take it away. Himalayan pink crystal salt.
Nice.
So I'm very into salt, which Roger found out when he came over and I was drinking broth the other day. And then he made me some broth, which was amazing.
Yeah. And today Colin was just munching on salt crystals.
Just eating whole salt crystals. Delicious. So I'm really into salt and I'm really into figuring out ways to benefit my health through different kinds of salt. And this Himalayan pink crystal salt is great stuff for many, many reasons. So it contains 84 minerals, whereas the salt that we get over the counter, the manufactured...
It's like black market salt.
Sodium chloride. Yeah. The sodium chloride stuff, you know, they put iodine in there, but there's 83 other minerals that they generally forget to put in there, because iodine's the biggest one. We know it's one of the largest causes of mental retardation and developmental issues. So they add iodine back in. However, this salt contains tons of minerals. It tastes delicious. When you put it in your salt shakers and have friends over for dinner, it's pink. So it's an immediate conversation starter for those awkward silences. And it's just delicious. It comes from the Himalayan region of the Karakoram mountain range, located 400 miles from the Hunza Valley. I mean, that alone, you gotta figure something like that's just good for you.
I like that you have the geography down.
And these deposits, they're around 250 million years old. Is I don't know where I got that number from. I think it's Wikipedia, which is never wrong, ever. and so the big thing here is that if the theory is if they're that old, then there's not going to be as much heavy metals or pesticides in them. So it's a great way to get your salt up, throw the stuff all over your food. It's less salty tasting than the traditional table salt, and you're getting a bunch of minerals with it. And I use a water filter, a water filtration device that Roger and I talked about last week. Looks like a rocket pack, but it pulls a lot of the minerals out of my water that...
Yep.
That they put in that I don't want, and they're like fluoride, et cetera. So this is a good way to get some of those minerals back in. So
that's great.
Get out and get some of your pink crystal salt and salt load if you need to. What do you got for us?
I've got sardines. Another salty delicacy. So the deal with sardines is this. This is another one of those foods to go along with fermented foods from a couple episodes ago that years ago I would have thought you were gross. You were just disgusting for trying to get me to eat. And it is, again, incredible how the times do change. As you get more and more focused on the nutrition aspects of food and maybe a little further removed from the, hey, this tastes amazing, let me keep eating it. Not to say that obviously the food we eat doesn't taste amazing, but different kind of amazing, right? It's not the shock your taste buds 100 times as sweet as anything else sugar. You know what I mean?
More of a salty than sweet.
Exactly. So I just recently... ventured into the sardine territory for their nutritional benefits, good source of omega-3s. If you eat it with bone in, skin on, it's also a great source of calcium and minerals and those kinds of things. So Wild Planet is the brand that I got. And the best part of Wild Planet is that the cans are BPA-free. So
nice.
There's not as much risk associated with its packaging. So I have been going to canned sardines. I believe the Whole Foods around us does have fresh sardines, but I haven't yet. I just wanted to try them, and I've been pleasantly surprised by it. It tastes pretty good.
I got to try.
I got it in extra virgin olive oil and lemon was the brand of Wild Planet I tried, and I'll tell you, it was nice. And what I did it in the context of, to tie some of these podcasts together, a couple of weeks ago we talked about the breakfast experiment, right? Meat and nuts. Yeah. And I started rotating in as a, you know, type of meat or something close to it. I would eat hamburger, then I would eat free range chicken, then I would eat sometimes then it would be back to grass fed hamburger, and it's like, all right, how about something new? And so I plugged sardines into the rotation, and I really like what's come out of it.
Nice. I gotta start eating more of those. I must say my craziness threshold has surpassed most canned items, so I probably won't get them canned.
Yeah.
Just because I'm that crazy.
Yeah.
You guys out there, you know, it's to each his own. I'm just that crazy. But I will go with the fresh.
Nice.
This weekend.
I like it.
Every recommendation Roger has ever made, I have followed through on, and they have been amazing.
And likewise, crazy enough, I'm actually considering getting a Rocket Pack water filter.
Nice.
It just took a couple times over here seeing this thing, and now I want one for myself.
That's great. I will be your water filter consultant.
Nice. Funny, those items, when it comes to food, Marissa and I were talking about this. You know, what'd you say? It's like 200 plus bucks.
Yeah, this was a pricey one.
But what we do is we get water a lot from our local Whole Foods, you know? So we're spending a decent amount of water. It's amazing when you spend a buck on water at your local Whole Foods or grocery store or wherever, you don't really think about how that adds up over time when you compare it to something like this water filter that I think you said you change them out every 6 months, right?
6 months, yeah.
6 months. So 6 months of spending a buck on water, and we drink a lot of water, I think this could save us money.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Oh, absolutely, over the long term. And your water's not sitting in plastic, yes. And you're not creating more plastic just getting thrown around the environment, leaching their chemicals into our drinking water. So people like you are using more plastic that is getting it into my water. I need to get another water filter now. No, I'm just kidding.
Isn't it amazing how we're sitting here, you know, you're saying I'm really into salt, and we're talking about water filters. You know, a decade ago, what were our hobbies then? Certainly
Madden,
not salt.
Madden football.
Yeah, Madden football.
Kill
right?
Anyone in Madden football. Yeah. I was probably a lot cooler.
We certainly weren't thinking about salt and water filters, but we are healthier now. So
yeah, true.
There is that saving grace. Yeah. So it is time. Insert sound effect here. Dr. Champ's Caveman Corner.
I love the Caveman Corner. My favorite time of the day, of the week, excuse me.
And today you have neither PCC or DCC, Premature Caveman Corner or Delayed Caveman Corner.
No, I'm getting better. I've been practicing. Mine is a quick one, and this is going to drive doctors out there crazy. But for you patients out there that are taking medications, really look through the side effects of these medications and really look through the risks versus benefits for these medications. It is easy for physicians and for patients to want to be very proactive and do everything they can to improve their health. But for everything you do, there is always a side effect. So make sure any medicine out there, you actually need it. Because it's easy for these things to pile up. I have family members that, you know, one gets added and added. Next thing you know, you're on 15 meds. Half of them are counteracting each other. And if you can get off these meds, you know, really push for that. But that is my big takeaway for the day, my caveman corner, and it's going to drive your physicians nuts. But in the end of the day, if you can get off meds, they will love you for it, because that's really our job, is to not have you on medications, to have you on no medications, to avoid medications.
And in many cases, not all cases, but in many cases, especially when we talk about things like statins, wouldn't you say that you can do a lot of damage? I mean, in this case, I mean positive damage. You can do a lot of positive with your nutrition and exercise, to the point that those drugs can really just fall away.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the benefit of statins is just minimal, and some studies really show nothing. And now these long-term studies are showing that they increase your risk of diabetes by over 10%.
And statin and drugs like that really do, in some aspects, mask the root cause.
Yeah, and every case is individualized. There are some genetic issues where you have to do something, but you know, if you can do it through nutrition.
Yes.
That should be our number one goal.
Yep.
All right, what do you got for us, the Relentless Report?
Relentless Report goes like this today. Inspire someone, period. It's amazing that when you inspire someone to live better, what you get back in return. Just mentally, it really reinforces you. And this is the life that I choose to live, I think that we choose to live. We really try and give out as much positive inspiration as possible. For me, it was at a wedding this past weekend that Marissa and I went to. A really good friend of mine who got married after how long? Well, anyway, shout out. I'll just sum that up by saying shout out to my good friend Andrew for his recent marriage. But we did go to that wedding, and you know, we're sitting at the rehearsal dinner, and it's innocuous conversation. We're just kind of going back and forth with these two really nice couples. And one of the couples sees that we turn down the bread and we turn down the pasta. And he started to prod us a little bit about what we did for a living. And obviously we started talking about our studio, Relentless Fitness, and what we do there on a daily basis. And we're just having good talks. And of course we fire back at him, hey, what do you do for a living? I didn't think anything else of it. And then the next day was the actual wedding, and then the reception afterwards. And he and I again got into a discussion. And he said, you know, I'm approaching 30, and it's time for me to, I think he's actually 30 in 2 weeks. And he said, it's time for me to take control of my health. And you guys really inspired me last night. And this, it was pretty amazing. You know, we were at an event that the last thing on my mind was to inspire someone. What was on my mind was it was my buddy's wedding and we were going to have a good time. But just having that come out of left field was amazing. And it really, it reinforced the life choice that I've made, and it reinforces these decisions I make on a daily basis to live healthfully. So I would say to everybody out there, go inspire somebody. And when you do, and when you see the positive effects rub off on that person, it will do even more for you and your mindset than it will for them.
I love it. Roger, you inspire me every day.
Right back at you, Dr. Jam.
Now that's good stuff. I've noticed too, the more places I go, more and more that people notice when I'm turning down certain foods.
Yep.
And at least afterwards, they say they do the same. I've gotten a couple emails.
Yep. And it's a conversation starter. I refer to these types of people as someones because you don't even know that it's happening sometimes. Mm-hmm. They become someones. It's, you might have inspired someone and you'll never know about it for the rest of your life. And they might walk away and they'll be at that table with you and see you pass up the bread or the pasta or pass up the wedding cake or whatever, or the office cake at the birthday. They might never tell you, but that one instance of them seeing you do that could resonate in their mind for a long, long time. And I think for those of you out there just dipping your toes into paleo, I think one of the hardest things is going out to a restaurant or an event or your friend's barbecue and saying no to something or asking for a swap out. It's one of the hardest humps to mentally get over. It's, I don't want to bother the waiter or waitress, so I just ate it. Once you get over that hump, you can really flip the perspective on that. It can become an empowering thing, a conversation starter, an inspirational thing to make that swap out versus something to be super self-conscious about. So stay the course.
Absolutely. Waiters and waitresses hate me. No, that's great. Great stuff. I think it was a great podcast. I'm pretty excited.
Episode 7.
We're in the books.
We're going to have to do something big for episode 10, the decade mark.
Yeah, we need to do one on YouTube or something.
Yeah, yeah. We'll look into that.
We'll have to change locations.
All right. Episode 7 wrapping up. Check us out on iTunes. Shoot us a review. Thank you so much, as always, for listening. I am Relentless Roger.
Caveman Doctor.
Dr. Champ. We will see you next week.
Have a good weekend.